Hey everybody, this is Sean from ARVR Magazine, and today I'm talking with John Kowola from Boston Microfabrication, which is a manufacturer of micro 3D printers with a special focus on AR and VR related components. So with that said, I'll see you in the episode. If you like this podcast, be sure to click the subscribe button. You can also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and TikTok in order to stay up to date on all the latest episodes. Today's podcast was brought to you by Boston Microfabrication. Boston Microfabrication manufactures micro precision 3D printers. The printers are powered by a patented 3D printing technology called projection micro stereolithography, or PULSE. PULSE is capable of achieving resolution of 2 microns to 50 microns and tolerances of plus or minus 5 microns to 25 microns, thus providing mold-free, ultra-high resolution for fast prototyping and end part capability. Many leading AR/VR technology companies started using micro 3D printing as a method for producing various micro precision components as an alternative to traditional fabrication methods, finding huge time and cost savings. BMF enables companies in this competitive space to address development challenges limited by current microfabrication methods, but also allows companies to explore the potential of pushing the limits on miniaturization by expanding the boundaries otherwise thought impossible with 3D printing. For more information, please visit www.bmf3d.com. Welcome to the ARVR Magazine podcast, your source for news, trends, and analysis of the AR, VR, and immersive technology industry. This podcast has been brought to you by the Robot Spaceship Podcast Network. For more info and other great podcast series, go to robotspaceship.com and subscribe. And now your host, Sean Early. Hey everybody, this is Sean from ARVR Magazine, and today we are talking to John Kowola from Boston Microfabrication, which is a manufacturer of micro precision 3D printers, which have some pretty interesting applications for the immersive technology hardware industry. So John's going to tell us all about that. So John, great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks Sean. Happy to be here.
So tell me about Boston Microfabrication. I mean, what do you guys do? And maybe give me a brief intro on the company, brief history.
Yeah, sure thing. So, so Boston Microfabrication, we'll use BMF for short, was founded not too long ago, in 2017, and it was an idea spun out of MIT here in the Boston area. That's where I live, and it's using a additive manufacturing technology, which is often referred to as stereolithography or DLP, which uses a laser and resins to make parts. And 3D printing, additive manufacturing in general, has been around for a long time now, you know, 25 to 30 years in automotive and medical device and aerospace and consumer goods and used for prototyping and increasingly manufacturing. But one of the areas that has historically been missing is in additive is the ability to get down to very high precision parts. So these are typically parts on the order of, you know, features that are maybe 50 microns, tolerances in the, you know, tens of microns range. And that was, you know, up until BMF wasn't really achievable even with the best of the 3D printing technologies. And so that was really the thesis behind how this company was formed. It was started in 2017. We have operations in Boston, in China, in Japan, and in Europe. We're still an early stage company, about 50 people, you know, getting our technology out there. And the industries broadly that we address are the industries that demand that type of precision.
Right.
So this tends to be things like medical device, microfluidics for drug discovery. There's a bunch of filtration applications in both sort of gas separation and in medical applications. Electrical connectors, you know, when you get down to very small electrical connectors.
Okay.
You know, MEMS sensors, you know, those types of devices are increasingly interested in that level of precision.
Okay. I mean, I'll have to be perfectly honest. I mean, my experience with 3D printers is pretty limited. I mean, I worked at a company for a while back and they had a MakerBot when they first came out. And so that's kind of my experience. I mean, we printed out like some big clunky owl shape, you know, and it took all day, and when we got it, we kind of had to like carve away at it with a knife, so it still looked like an owl, sure. You know, and I checked out your website, and I mean, this is light years away from anything, you know, I've experienced with that before. I mean, there are pictures on your website of parts that are like the size of the head of a pencil, like a fully, yeah. like yeah. some valve or something. I don't know what that is, but it's so tiny and it's so immaculate. I was like amazed. I was like, I can't believe we can get this small these days. I mean, that's pretty incredible. I mean, maybe kind of go into a little bit for people who aren't familiar with 3D printing in general. I mean, how do your machines sort of differ from that whole sort of wide spectrum?
So as I said, MakerBot's actually first started showing up around 10 years ago.
Right.
But before that, there, you know, starting in the 90s, there were a few core, I'll call them methods. So, you know, we can talk about 3D printing or additive broadly, but there's a handful, probably like four or five different methods of 3D printing. Some are extruding plastic. That's what a MakerBot does. Some are spreading powder and sintering it with a laser. Some are using a resin and then curing it with a light source. That's more similar to what BMF does. There are technologies using plastics. There are technologies now using powdered metal. And a lot of these large range of technologies are for different applications. You know, some are good at making large metal parts. Some are good at making very precise parts like our technology. Things like MakerBots, you know, the whole idea about a MakerBot is that it was only a few thousand dollars to get a machine.
Right, and right.
It's useful for engineers or schools. So the landscape is I wouldn't say it's complete, but it's pretty full right now with lots of different technologies that are out there. What BMF has been focused on is, given all these technologies out there, there was still a gap. And of, you know, even of the best of the technologies that they're out there, you know, with the most trained operators, we're not able to get these level of tolerances and precision. And so for people who were in those industries, like in electrical components or medical device, and one, they, if they just wanted a prototype, they'd have a hard time prototyping because they couldn't get the performance that they're looking for. And then two, if they wanted to start to consider 3D printing as an alternative for real manufacturing, just that wasn't there. I mean, these are typically components that in manufacturing are made through processes like micro injection molding or micro machining or a few techniques that are very used in the semiconductor industry, like etching and photolithography and bonding. Okay. So these are all manufacturing techniques that are used today to make these types of small components. And, you know, increasingly there will be opportunities for additive to displace those methods.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess for layman's terms, it's sort of like there's a high level where, you know, you have I forgot the term you described it, like the MakerBot that injects the plastic on layers. And then you have sort of a solution that you actually inject light into, and it creates it in a much more micro.
So maybe I can describe a little bit how the BMF technology works.
So you can visualize the whole.
Yeah. The chemistry behind what happens here is we have liquid resin, and it's what's often called a photopolymer. So it means that it's a resin. And then when you expose it to light, a light source, and that light source could be a laser or it could be some other light source. We don't use a laser. We use a DLP projector. So a digital light projector, that's used in lots of other sort of VR, like a laptop projector, for example, when you'd have your conference room, that's a DLP projector. That's a great example of a DLP projector. So we're using a DLP light source and then flashing onto the vat of resin, and we're flashing an image, and that image is a slice of the part.
Okay.
So we flash an image. What happens is when the light hits the resin, it cures it. It solidifies that resin, and then the platform moves down one layer, and then we flash again. And that's how you build up the part layer by layer in an additive way. So a good way to visualize that, if you're actually making just a sphere, a solid ball, the mm-hmm. first layer would be a dot. And then the right. second layer would be a slightly larger dot. Right. You would get larger and larger and larger, and then it would get smaller and smaller and smaller. And then the last layer would be a dot. And that's how that's additive manufacturing.
Okay.
And how that's done.
And so I guess you can print like multiple items in sort of one vat correctly,
or so that's the advantage of using a DLP projector versus a laser. So a laser laser, you could also print multiple in one vat. That's okay. But you're sort of drawing the whole part. Like the point is going around and sort of curing around the point. The advantage of the DLP approach is it flashes all at once.
Right.
So you're getting a speed advantage. A big speed advantage using DLP. So, and then the special sauce with BMF is we take this basic concept of a vat of resin and a DLP projector, and then we do a few other things. We have high precision optics that help to really focus the image. And when we're focusing, we're getting down to what we describe as an optical resolution of between 2 and 10 microns.
Okay.
So that actually means the pixel itself in the DLP projector is either 2 or 10 microns, depending on the platform you buy.
Wow.
And then the other thing that we control is we have to move the vat around, because if you want to make a larger part, you want to make more parts at once, we need to be able to move it in the X, Y, and Z. And if our customers are demanding not only very high resolution, but they also require very high accuracy and precision. So you have to be able to maintain those levels of accuracy. And so we highly control the movement in the XYZ. So a good example, people in medical device and AR, VR components, they require both high resolution, meaning very crisp and small features, but also very accurate parts. People in jewelry, for example, don't care that much about accuracy. They care about resolution, but if it's off by a bunch, you can't really tell. It doesn't really matter. But in some of the technical markets like AR, VR, they definitely care about those things.
Right. Now, you can sort of print in different types of material as well.
So the big point in really all of 3D printing is that for prototyping applications, what most people care about is, am I getting the geometry that effectively mimics the final part that I want to make?
Right.
Can I get it, relatively quickly, relatively cost effectively? And is the material, strong enough that I can hold it in my hand or fit it together or do some basic testing? So for prototyping, the demand is not really that tough. Long as the part is, pretty good. Because for prototyping, it doesn't need to last for a long time. You may use it once. You may just look at it and throw it away. That still might be valuable to you. But as you move into production, the materials that you're using to prototype, whether it's the materials you're using on the 3D printer for production, whether it's plastic or metal, they need to pretty closely mimic the materials that are being used in production today.
Okay.
So, for example, if these parts are normally a polycarbonate or an ABS plastic that is normally injection molded, that means our photopolymers need to come pretty close to mimicking that performance.
Okay.
And that's what we endeavor to do. So we have a range of materials from a high strength material to a high temperature material to a more flexible material to a some biocompatible materials for medical device applications. So we have a sort of a library of different materials that people can use with the goal of mimicking the engineering plastics that they use today.
Okay. So it could be any sort of type of substance simulation, I guess. I mean, you can do glass as well?
Or? We can't quite do glass. It's a good question. But it depends on what the application is. So if you're looking, we can do a part. It's not glass, but it is optically clear.
Right. That, I guess that was my question.
Yeah. So it very often our customers will say, can you do glass or can you do silicone or can you do a certain type of plastic? And technically we're not doing those exactly, but what we're trying to do is replicate what they care about. Might be optical clarity, might be flexibility, might be high temperature performance, you know, whatever there is most important to them.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the opticals aspect of it.
Yeah, so when we think about in optical applications, we really can't do lens quality.
Okay.
At this point, but we can do a lot of the other things, and maybe we'll get into that a little bit more when we talk about AR/VR.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess that just leaves me the question. I mean, obviously, you know, AR/VR is sort of a, you know, it's been around a long time. It started in big clunky, you know, giant things the military used and kind of worked down to the Oculus headsets. And now we're getting into the XR sort of glasses, mobile end of things. So things are downsizing, obviously. And, you know, it's a natural progression that's needed in the industry. So I imagine, you know, the services like yours and printers and devices to miniaturize are very important for that process to you know, for us to sort of reach this mass adoption rate that we're trying to hit with immersive tech. So I mean, maybe get into a little bit about that. Where are you on that end of things? I mean, obviously you make very small parts, so I mean that's clear, but I mean, what can you elaborate a little
bit? So what's driving a lot of the demand for us is that this push for miniaturization. I mean, it's true in AR, VR, but it's also true in lots of other industries as well, you know, medical device and other things. And, you know, the trends that have happened over the last, you know, 5 to 10 years on a couple fronts, you know, are driving that miniaturization. And, but then there's also constraints, you know, what's holding it back. Processing power, right? The size of a chip, you know, continues to get smaller.
Right? Yep.
Sort of follows Moore's law. The size of sensors or lenses continue to get smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. So that in a lot of ways, the miniaturization of the chips and the miniaturization of the lenses or sensors is accelerating quickly. But one of the constraints to being able to really put that into production applications is the ability to create all the infrastructure around those, I'll call active components.
Okay.
So what am I talking about? I'm talking about chip packaging.
Yeah.
I'm talking about lens holders. I'm talking about waveguide components. So all these things that aren't the chips or the lenses, the active components, but all the stuff around them. And that's where we do really well. Because these parts, you know, often they're either plastic or metal, but they're typically need to be very high precision.
Right.
And small. And one of the sort of realities of manufacturing is that if you're making a very small, complex, highly precise plastic part, that's today, that's pretty expensive to do. You know, the molding cost to do that is, in some cases, an order of magnitude more expensive than it is to make, you know, a larger, simple plastic part the size of your coffee cup. And so given the fact that the manufacturing costs and the complexity of making those very precise small parts is high, that makes it a great opportunity to consider 3D printing as an alternative.
Right. I mean, obviously, things need to be small, but they mean... if they're small, they need to be structurally sound enough to mm-hmm. hold, you know, what they're supposed to do. It just reminds me of nanotechnology in a way. It's just kind of reaching the physical limitations of small structures. I guess we're reaching into the future here, but I mean, that's kind of where you guys were going. I mean, you're going very, if you're talking pixel quality in small sizes with material, I mean, it can only just get smaller eventually, right?
Yeah. And I think there's, I mean, there are technologies that are, so we feel our sweet spot and where there's a really big opportunity is in that, I'm going to call the micro level. I'm not going to quite use the nano level.
Right.
You know, these are parts that are small, but you can see them. They're in your hand.
Yeah.
And they're going to be assembled and used in some functional device. There are certainly nanotechnologies out there of doing, you know, very, very small parts that maybe you can't even see without a microscope. The challenge with using those technologies is if you wanted to make a part, like some of the parts that you've seen are on our website that are small, but they're still, you know, something that you can see.
Yeah.
Some of those nanotechnologies would take a very long time to make that.
Right.
It might take, you know, days to make that. And so what we're trying to do is balance the ability to do this high precision, but also with some reasonable throughput, because customers, you know, maybe some of these markets are not yet at sort of iPhone volume scale, like an AR VR, but some of these manufacturers want to make hundreds of thousands of parts. And, you know, when you're in the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, that starts to get into the range of being feasible economically of doing 3D printing versus molding.
Right. I can see that. I have to say, if anybody's listening, I mean, you really got to check out the website, because it is, I mean, the parts are so small and so like solid looking as well. I mean, sometimes you see things that are small and they're kind of flaky looking, you know, you can't quite like, but your stuff is like super crisp and super solid looking. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing just to watch. Just like, there's a video on there as well where they just kind of go over some, there's like a bowl full of little small parts. It's amazing. John, I would say if people want to reach out to you guys and check out your stuff, where do they go?
Yeah. So, the website is best place to start. So it's www.bmf3d.com.
Okay.
And and so the way most people get engaged with us is they reach out to us, and one of the great ways to understand if this technology can fit with what you're doing is to engage with us and send us one of your files, and we'll make one for you. We'll send it back to you, and that, you know, we find 9 times out of 10 when we send it back, the prospect says, "Oh, this is pretty interesting. This is better than I've been able to do before," and that starts the conversation.
Okay. Trick question before we go here. What's the smallest, weirdest thing you've printed?
Smallest, weird. I don't know. There's a lot of weird small stuff going on. I mean, some of the really impactful stuff. You know, we're doing a lot of work with immunization technologies now. Microneedles, because I think the world is now discovering that immunizing everybody in the world quickly is not easy to do.
Right.
So, it's not a brand new idea. It's been in the works for a couple of years, but now I think the events of the last year has sort of prompted everybody to hurry up. So we're doing a bunch of work in microneedle technology. There's a lot of drug discovery and drug delivery technologies where we're actually talking about, you know, you've heard about, seen these things in movies or of, you know, robots basically, you know, crawling around in your body, whether they're diagnostic or whether they're actually delivering some remedy or solution. Those things need to be really small. And so there's a whole bunch of companies out there doing development for, I'm going to call them bio robots.
Okay.
A bunch of things on that front.
Wow, that's super exciting stuff. I'm really looking forward to seeing where that goes. John, it was really great talking to you, really interesting. I learned a whole lot, and I'm sure there's like nothing but blue sky for you guys in this industry, because there's so much need for this type of product and downsizing, obviously. So once again, this was John Kowola. And if you want to learn more about BMF, go to www.bmf3d.com.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, John.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Well, thanks, John, for being on the show.
Okay. Take care.
If you like this podcast, don't forget to click the subscribe button to stay up to date on all the latest episodes. This podcast has been brought to you by the Robot Spaceship Podcast Network. For more info and other great podcast series, go to robotspaceship.com and subscribe.